Let's see, 9 a.m. and the meeting is called to order. I'll ask Secretary Hickman to do a roll call.
Good morning. Chair Bell.
Present.
Regent Ball.
Present.
Regent Brick.
Present.
Regent Arms.
Present.
Secretary Hickman. Present. Regent Hinson.
Present.
Sir, I said present, honey. God's looking down.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Here.
Regent Mayer.
Present.
Regent McKinney.
Present.
Regent Nichols. Regent Porter.
Present.
Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. I will announce that Regent Nichols flew into town yesterday to be at the meeting and had an emergency come up, and he's soon getting on a plane flying back to Philadelphia. And that is the reason he's not with us. I want to recognize in the audience somewhere we have the new student regent, I think observing Will Harris. Where'd you go, Will?
Right here.
There he is. Will, nice to have you come aboard soon. Right. Next item of business is approval of our minutes from the March 1st quarterly meeting.
So moved.
A motion and a second to approve our minutes. Any discussion? Comments? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Like sign? Motion and minutes for pass. The committees of the board met on April 12th. To discuss each item on their respective agendas and recommended submitting the agenda items to the full board for consent action, with the exception of items AA4 and EX3. These items should be removed from the consent agenda for discussion and separate vote. In addition, we have a new finance and budget informational item on the agenda for discussion today. With that, I'll turn the meeting over to Chair McKinney of the Academic Affairs Committee. Items AA-1 through AA-3 were presented and discussed at the April 12th committee meeting. Is there any further discussion on these items, or would anybody like to remove any item from the consent agenda?
I would like to move AA-3 from the consent agenda and have discussion.
Second. Okay. Any others? That is the only one. Then well, I'll call for a vote on AA-1 to AA-2.
We probably have to ask for a motion.
Motion to approve the consent agenda. Do I have a motion to approve consent agenda items AA-1 and AA-2?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
There you go. Okay. All in favor of approving AA-1 and AA-2, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed,
say no.
All right, motion passes. All right, on to discussion of AA-3.
Jason, Chair, I have to move that we approve the Comprehensive Academic Program Evaluation Recommendation with the following three exceptions: 042, MAE, and Education and Behavioral Science Studies, 447, minor in religious studies, 318, minor in astronomy, for further review, and that they be referred to the provost, provided that the provost recommends this action.
Okay.
That is my motion.
I have a motion on the floor. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All right. Do you have a second? Anybody like to discuss the motion?
Could we ask the provost to?
Sure.
Could you ask questions on this? Yeah. Motion.
Provost Stevens, would you recommend this action?
Yes. Want me to elaborate?
Please.
So
probably 2 weeks ago, I met with the committee, the CAPE committee. This is the faculty committee that did the reviews of all the programs. The committee always understood that there would be four levels of review, and they never wanted to be the final arbiter of these programs. The three that are on the table are the programs that, for a variety of reasons, including broader implications that the committee might not have known about, split votes. They didn't want to have the final say in those. They didn't want to have the final say in any of them, actually. They always understood that it would go to provost. Those are the three that have been identified that had been appealed that could, okay, I would like to take another look. I just don't want to make a mistake that we can't go back on because of something that the committee didn't understand and that there was no final level.
So the committee's okay with that?
I don't know.
Absolutely.
I have a similar motion, which is slightly broader, which I already sent to you all, which is also based on the fact that the CAPE committee process was always intended for the provost to take a final look. My motion was formulated broader because I did not want to render any judgment in terms of which things ought to be reviewed and which ought to be not. And so my motion was limited to those programs which were appealed under the CAPE process. Some of these votes on the committee in the CAPE process were very narrow. And my motion would simply would have said that the provost should have the opportunity to review all programs that were appealed and denied. Those were 12. The reason I did not want to get into the specifics in terms of pointing out which programs they are is because I think that we as a group do not know that we make such a judgment. So I'm in favor of this motion, but I still want to make my motion following this one.
So, are you making a motion?
Well, there's a motion on the floor, so...
You can't make that? Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, well, all in favor of the motion on the floor? Say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All right, motion passes.
I would like to make the motion that several programs' decisions were appealed during the CAPE process and a recommendation to disband was upheld by the CAPE committee. The motion is to allow Provost Stevens to review these recommendations of the CAPE committee and make a small limited number of changes if the provost believes that these changes are in the best interest of WPU. This review should be completed before our June meeting, where Provost Stevens will report to the board about such changes, if any occurred, and why they weren't.
Okay, I have a motion. I have a second. All right, would anybody like to discuss the motion?
I want to give some arguments which go a little bit beyond the arguments which were just given. So the CAPE review always was intended for the provost to have the final say. In the university, it is common practice that curricular items are passed through a chain of faculty committees, end up in the university senate, and the university senate makes a recommendation to the provost, who then either accepts or rejects or suggests modification of these proposals. And the CAPE review should have followed the same procedure. To some unique circumstances, that was cut short, and this step was eliminated. I'm aware of some other programs which were not along this list, which David just mentioned. And to just give you an example of why one might want to make changes, it's as follows. The CAPE review used enrollment data as of fall 17. So this data is now basically a year and a half old. And, for example, there are minors which have seen, since that time, a healthy increase in enrollment. I have given numbers from a program, I'm not going to name the program, but for example, they used to be in fall 17, they used to be 12, now they're 25. No, 22, sorry. And then other one, they were 17, now they're 25. If these, if the forecast would be that these growth rates would be sustained, then I think there's no reason to eliminate such programs. As a final thing, and that's something most of you will not be aware of either, is the following. If you're going to eliminate a miner, then there are zero savings usually associated with this. Because if a miner exists, there exists a major. And all the courses that need to run for the major essentially can accommodate a handful of students who take the minor. So cutting a miner does not eliminate any course offering at all. And so basically having these minors at zero expense to the university gives some students some additional choices they do not have otherwise. And because of that, I believe that it is reasonable to allow the provost to review all programs that were contested in that review process and see if she wants to make changes to them. As I said before, those were 12.
Klaus, I'm happy to review the programs that he's suggesting. I'm not going into this with the expectation that I'm going to override what the committee did unless there's some reason beyond what they would know or understand. I disagree about your comment about no cost. Because, in fact, if you do have a major and a minor with 25 students enrolled in it, you might have to offer a second section. And that does have cost associated with it.
I don't disagree with that. It depends, and that's what your review will uncover.
A handful, it probably doesn't make a difference. But if you have a large minor, it does cost. But if you do have a large minor, that shows interest. And I think if we're actually at the point where we're talking about suspending a minor with 25 students in it, we really ought to look at transforming that to make it more relevant. There's something going on there that where this discussion started and ended that needs another look. And I think it's reasonable to take that look so that we don't make a mistake.
I have a question, and I'll throw this out there. We talk about the data that was used. Is there growth beyond the dates of the data? But we didn't talk about decline beyond the dates of the data. And in the same consideration that Klaus is giving to growth in certain areas, we're not considering the decline in others. So when you open that box and you don't pick a date, you're opening yourself, would you say, consideration that could go well beyond the scope of just those 12. Because if we're talking about a data review now instead of a comprehensive consideration, wouldn't that cut both ways?
That's true. As dean, when I did these reviews, I had a program that was, in my mind, questionable, and I recommended a transformation and, in some cases, just some efficiencies put in place. I also put a statement in there that said re-review in 2 years. Because I think that if we have programs like this that are questionable, on the line, may not be time to suspend them. Try and do something so that they become relevant, that we can increase enrollment, that they bring in a return on investment. But if they can't do that in 2 years, then we take another look and then we go back to suspend.
So, as a follow-up, what you were saying is that you gave your faculty an opportunity to make it a transformational process,
yes.
And in some cases they may have declined to do that or chosen not to.
I didn't actually ask. I did say that, I'm trying to think of an example, one of the ones on the list, that of your three, there were two minors, and I recommended suspension of one and transformation of the other because I believe that it would be a stronger minor if they would transform one to include options for both. rather than have two separate ones. The committee came back with suspend both. And in something like that, I would have put a qualification that said re-review in 2 years, in 2021, to make sure that they had done what was asked of them. But I didn't actually ask them if it was okay.
Richard McKinney, one of the things that I think that is important to remember about this process, and people forget this sometimes, the CAPE process is not a one-and-done opportunity. What we're trying to create as an institution is a culture of innovation where every year we evaluate everything that we're doing and see where there are opportunities for growth, for suspension, for transformation. And I've had several folks come up to me and say, I hope we never do this again. That's the absolute wrong sentiment. I hope we do this every year because it means we're being self-critical. It means we're taking a look at what we're doing and finding opportunities to innovate. And it's also looking at things and saying, what are we going to stop doing? And in the spirit of that, the provost leads the academic side of the house. And what I hope we're able to do is, no matter what the outcome of this motion is, we're going to look at all of our degree programs every year, maybe not this level of detail, but it's a lot like a thermostat. Where are the places we have high-performing programs, and how do we create others that emulate that? Where do we have low-performing programs, and how do you intervene and change that low performance or suspend them and move in a different direction? So that's the conversation we're looking for. This is not really about a single process. It's about a change in culture. And creating a culture of innovation and self-reflection. So I just wanted to add that as we're having this conversation.
Thank you.
And in addition, that meeting that we had with the CAPE committee, they recognized and confirmed that we should be doing this every few years to look at where these programs stand and that it's a continuation of a process.
So bottom line, the motion that we approved is not the end all be all. So this particular motion, I guess in my judgment, wouldn't add anything to what we've just approved. Because we're going to do it anyway.
We're going to do it anyway. What it does is it allows an opportunity to look at some additional programs that have been recommended for suspension rather than transformation, just to take a second. There were 12 programs that had been defended, and should they want to have another look, I'm happy to have another look, but that doesn't mean I'm going to just roll over and change it.
But you don't need a motion to do that, do you?
I think I do, because at this point, if you recommend full suspension or accepting of this report, then administratively these will be suspended. And the opportunity to go back and look at those programs then does not exist anymore.
I guess my thought is that I prefer to go back to what the committee did. I mean, it spent how many months doing what it did and how it accomplished its task. And I think it's come forward to this board, to the administration, very reasonable, well thought out, and well documented recommendation. And I understand the conversations with respect to the three. I think going beyond the committee's recommendations is not something we should do.
Except that you have indicated that you've communicated with the committee and that it was not the intention that necessarily be the final word.
They always understood it would be a recommendation to the provost.
Yeah, I'll disagree and say that we should put forth the motion because, one, we put through the past motion, so that's going to pull those three programs out, and if we need the motion to get the rest for the other nine programs to meet the 12 that were contested against from the committee, then I think we should go ahead and approve that so that she has the opportunity to look at those. Yes, we're not undermining the CAPE work, the CAPE committee's work. I think they did a phenomenal job this entire year. They went through, did their due diligence, and did what they were set out to do. But unfortunately, the process did not play out as it was originally set out to be, and I would like the provost to be the last line for those contested programs.
Madam Provost, you've been very busy recently, and so one of the questions I have, if these other nine are added on, does that overburden you? Is that...
I don't actually think that all nine will ask for a re-review. It's part of the job. I can handle it, really. It's okay.
The reason I formulated the motion as I did was because I did not want it to be specific, because that amounts to be playing favorites. And that's why I wanted to have this motion in a very general context. I don't know how David Brinkley came up with those three. I was aware of those three as well. But I did not want specified particular programs for the reason, because that just means that maybe those people contacted me and others did not. And that's why I formulated the motion on general criteria, which essentially does not take sides in terms of what the committee did or what the committee did not do. And this is not meant to slight the work of the committee. One of the things which also needs to be said, the review process and the contestant of those decisions was not a months-long progress. So the departments were informed, and then they had 2 weeks to respond. And one of those 2 weeks was spring break. So the defense they may have put together may not have been the optimal one. And again, I this motion says that I or the faculty trust the provost to do this in a way that is beneficial to the people.
Okay. Further discussion. All right, then I'll call for a vote. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Can we do hands just so I can make sure?
All in favor, please raise your hand.
Are we allowed to vote now when it's not a committee?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I want to make sure. I'm sorry, because I used to vote when I was
a regular vote.
Yes, sir, but I just wanted to make sure that I was
doing it. Okay. All in favor, please raise your hand. All right. All opposed, please raise your hand. Looks like the motion fails. Okay. There's one other additional item on our agenda today, AA-4. Approval of the fiscal year 2019-2020 average promotion attainment. Would you like to say anything first?
After a thoughtful review of the faculty portfolios received by the Office of Academic Affairs, we present here the promotion and tenure recommendations for your approval effective July 1st.
Do you have any discussion on that?
So moved.
Second. All right. Would anybody like to discuss? Okay. Hearing no discussion, I'll call for a vote. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say aye. All right. Motion carries. That concludes the academic affairs agenda.
All right. Thank you very much, Penny. And with that, we'll move on to the executive committee. Items 1 and 2 were presented and discussed at the April 12th committee meetings. Is there any further discussion on these items? If not, I will entertain a motion.
Motion for approval.
Second. Regent Pickens. Second. Regent Kinney. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor of approval of items 1 and 2, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. The next item on the executive committee agenda concerns our six-year capital plan. And we have someone here to talk about that, I believe. Right.
Brian informed me before the meeting that the school year ends, his busy season begins.
Yeah, starting on Monday, we have lots of summer projects this year that are needed. We try to do those projects when we're least busy on campus. Very important to get those done each year. Good morning and appreciate the time. We have in front of us our six-year capital plan. I like to refer to those as a needs assessment for the university. The needs assessment that we go through a process where we request information from our leadership. Usually that'll go to the deans of the department. From the deans of the department, it goes down to the department heads. We look at our six-year capital plan. We look at our facilities assessment that we completed 2017. And then from that, we developed a list of projects for the university that are important, needed, and these are requests for authorization to the state. It is a requirement of the state to do this assessment. And present to them things that the university would like to get authorization for funding. It doesn't mean we have funding for these projects. It only means that we have requested authorization. And so with that, I'd like to make a request that we approve the list, or if you all have questions, be welcome to answer any of them.
Rita Bell, may I add, one of the interesting things that I've learned in the past 2 years is the importance of this list, not as things we're going to do in the next 6 years, but a wish list that creates flexibility in case there's an opportunity to pursue a project. And so there are things on here for which we don't have funding, where we might want to move in that direction if we had it. But just asking gives us the flexibility. For example, if there were a donor that wanted to make a lead gift, we could move forward without having to wait to the next cycle, which happens again in 2 years. So this just provides the institution flexibility. I would like to reiterate for everyone that our highest priority for a building that might be constructed by the state continues to be a new facility for the Gordon Ford College of Business. That's been number one on the list for several years. But as of now, obviously, we don't have state approval or investment to do that. But this just gives us the flexibility to be able to raise money and determine donor interest or think about other innovative ways we might be able to move forward on some construction projects.
Any comments?
Brian, I only have one question, and it's just for the record. There are two conflicting line items, and I know that's been mentioned maybe in the media this week, but just for the record, there's a renovation item of $6 million for Tate Page Hall. I'm sorry. Yeah, demolition item of $6 million for Tate Page. On the same list, a renovation of the same building. Could you just for the record elaborate as to why that's there and if you think it would cause anything?
Here is what we have, is that for years the master plan has indicated that Tate Page Hall is a building that the university has decided they would like to remove from our inventory. The small amount of money that we have for renovation is in the event that there needs to be some upgrades done to the building. The building's primary electric is in need of replacement, which could easily be that $1 million mark. We could also have a roof failure, but we have to protect the plant. The requirement of the six-year capital plan says we must have a plan or a request for any projects that we anticipate over $1 million. And so that's why that's on there. We have had this project on the list maybe the last 10 years or more, and so we have both. It's really not a confusion. It's only, again, asking for authorization. We try to anticipate if funding became available and Tate Page was available to be raised, we might execute that option with board approval.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Any other comments, questions?
In our current fiscal situation, it seems almost ironic to compile a list of $800 million plus to like really Christmas list, you know. One of the things I'm concerned about is that if we approve this, this doesn't mean that we approve any such project which might come forward. So I just want to have for the record that, like, for example, there's a parking structure which says agency bond, which would mean that we would have to do the bonding. Well, this is my understanding. And I'm currently not in a position where I would say that we should do such a thing.
Is that a question? I'm sorry.
No, that's just a comment. That essentially, this doesn't mean that we automatically approve any such thing which might come forward.
Yeah. No. This approval is really a requirement of the law, and it is a needs assessment, wish list, but it really is just letting the state of Kentucky know that these protection and plant projects, et cetera, exist, and we have interest. It only authorization we're really getting here from the state of Kentucky is would be the approval from the state to act on one of these projects later on. Well, you're exactly right. It doesn't say that we would have to seek authorization for agency bond projects, et cetera, in the future.
As you mentioned, you never know when a roof is going to leak or other problems come up. What is our situation with contingency fund for things like that?
Each year, I'm going to say in prior years up to this year, we have a critical needs fund that is provided to the Department of Facilities. That funding is approximately $1.4 million. We have a critical needs committee. We have lots of items that are on that list. We far exceed our needs with funding. But we strategically use those funds each year to fund summer projects, particularly. For instance, Grice Hall is receiving a $500,000 air handling unit for that particular facility. That is unit number four. We have each past year, we have made improvements in indoor air quality. It's one of my goals for the university is to continue to improve indoor air quality. Jones-Jaggers received funding, $350,000 one year to replace their system, air handling system, but it also conditioned the outside air. That building did not have that capacity, but it improved the indoor air quality. We've done that with some other buildings on campus. We'll continue to do that. And then on roofing, it's not unusual, you know, roof anymore. I have deferred maintenance at the Nicely Center, for example. I have a section of roof that's $560,000 that needs to be replaced. We do not have funding. Good example, Dill Arena, we've identified and we actually had water coming in during a ball game. That's $1 million project that needs funding. We don't have that funding. It exceeds our capacity. This summer, we're doing about a $350,000 to $400,000 steam line replacement in three different locations on campus. That is an absolute that rises to the top because what we try to do is prioritize operational reliability. And so we must keep our buildings functioning. Without that steam, we wouldn't be able to heat our buildings in certain areas. We had a failure this year that was critical outside of this building that potentially could have stopped heating of all of our campus to the south. It was, thank goodness, it was something that could be repaired in a relatively short period of time and did not impact operations. But that's the type of failure that is not predictable because almost all of our infrastructure has passed its useful life, and useful life is a predictor on systems that were put in the ground or based on a piece of equipment that have so many years of useful life. And after that useful life, you are just on good maintenance, good repairs, but it could fail. And a good example is Thompson Complex Center Wing, which is now Kelly Thompson Hall. We were built in 1967. We have just got our certificate of occupancy for that building, and it will be reoccupied. But we were able to, we were losing systems. We had never replaced the roof on that building since 67. It's received a new roof, new windows, all new HVAC equipment. We put all new lighting. Did we touch everything in the building with the amount of money we had? No. But it's going to be a much improved, more reliable facility. That's the type of projects that we prioritize.
President Columbia, I think you want.
I do. One of the conversations that we've been having as with our sister institutions and our presidents at the system level is around asset preservation as a system. The total for all of our universities across Kentucky is in the multiple billions of dollars in terms of state assets that are in need of repair and preservation. So I think that in the next legislative session, which is a budget year, that is likely to be one of the prime conversations among all of our institutions. We have to take care of the assets that we have. At the same time, we can't lose sight of the fact that we also need new facilities sometimes. So I want to be mindful, and we could invest millions of dollars, and you wouldn't see one thing from that investment, but it would make us a stronger institution. But you can't only do that. You also have to be willing to raise and replace, which I think will be part of our conversation going forward.
I do have one more academic building project we're doing this summer that just came up. Our Fine Arts Center, we have one side of the building, all four floors, the processed water or chilled water system lines that are in that facility. We have critically failed on fourth floor. That means we have holes in the piping. It is corroded to the point. We have a project that we implemented in a short period of time to replace that piping. But we have three more floors that is another $120,000 it would take. But we're not able to do that this summer due to academic operations that we don't have the time. And so we're going to gamble a little bit and wait till next summer to do the next three floors. But they're at a critical level. And so we have a lot of those conditions in our older buildings where we can start springing leaks at any time. We are springing leaks in Fine Arts as we speak. That has caused some issues, and we are addressing that here very, very shortly. So that's the type of things that you all do not see, but it does appear, and those things come up frequently in an aging infrastructure. So
does wonders for your sleeping at night, I can see.
Fire.
That's our number one. All right, any other comments or questions before we ask for a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the 2026 six-year capital university.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve the capital plan as presented. Any other discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Brian.
That will move to Regent Johnson and the Finance and Budget Committee.
We have no work. Action items on the agenda. We do have informational items for discussion, which is listed in the packet. So, President Caboni.
Thank you, Richard Johnson. I wanted to frame this information item for you. You will recall that we began about a year and a half ago a resource allocation and management process. Affectionately referred to as RAMP. Some folks thought that was the new budget model. It was not the new budget model. We're thinking differently as an institution about the way in which we allocate resources. And so one of the things we've done is, number one, had a process by which we had several committees working this year to surface and elevate recommendations around the formulation of next year's budget. The Executive Budget Committee made recommendations to me, the provost, and the CF. What's your title, Ann? I never know. Executive Vice President, Super Duper Vice President, Ann Mead, who's in her second to last board meeting.
Charge the money.
They made the recommendation around reduction allocations about a third of them be applied to our five colleges and about two-thirds of them to our support and auxiliary units. We accepted those recommendations, and we'll talk today about how those reduction allocations are allocated. You notice I'm not using a word today, and that is absolutely intentional. As an institution, our previous practice has been to identify things we were going to stop doing immediately when we have reduction targets. We're not going to do that this year. And the reason we're not is it's not strategically acceptable to do that. It doesn't make any sense for us to do that. We have 12 months to manage toward reduction targets. And so I want everyone to take a deep breath and know that next year's budget is about 0.5% smaller than this year's budget. If we can't manage through that without people's hair catching on fire or folks jumping off cliffs or thinking the sky is falling, we have a much larger problem as an organization. And so in the context of that today, what this enables is our academic leadership and our division leadership to have a number to which they will manage over the next 12 months. And that gives opportunities for cost avoidance, for cost savings, for capturing vacant positions, for making strategic decisions that allows for a unit to shrink its budget without doing things that affect the health long-term of the organization. It's a much more strategic process than having a number and then 2 weeks later having a list of things we're going to stop doing. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that. And the other is, well, why do we know what the college's reductions are but not for the support and auxiliary units? And the reason is, and the provost is prepared to talk about this after Ann, the provost and the colleges have a formula that is relatively easily applied to each of those five units. Whereas the auxiliary and support units have both a variety of functions, they're not common outcome metrics, and if you think about the work that we've done over the past 2 years in the budget, we need to make sure any reduction targets that we might allocate are sustainable for those organizations. So with that, I know this is a different conversation, it's a different process, and it's supposed to be different than we've done it in previous years. And so I look forward to hearing what Ann has to share with you.
Okay, fill in a few of the gaps, it is important to realize that changing this financial management approach is not something you necessarily achieve quickly, any more than when we had our discussions about implementing the new budget model. So the Division of Finance Administration and the Provost's Office will be both involved to help division heads and deans as necessary to step up the financial management skills and the monitoring that is likely needed that may or may not have happened in the past. So that's going to be important. Where we are right now is close to going to the printer with your budget that you'll approve June 21st. The estimated budget is $388 million, which is only $657,000 different than the budget you approved for the current year.
Can you say that again?
$657,000 in total funds. Now, you know, you're fully aware of how the budget is structured, and it's 0.5% or $1.9 million on the unrestricted budget. But sometimes the message on campus, even as I get into one of the items, which is the reduction targets, the number looks big, psychologically anyone in a department might go, OMG, how could we be implementing a $10 million reduction for a large budget, for a large complex budget with a lot of funding sources? So while the total budget is not changing much, we are down to the unrestricted budget, which is in fact $1.9 million overall. And then within the tuition, we obviously are projecting a decline in tuition revenue. The tuition revenue we're projecting was a process last February with the best information we had to say what looks like a conservative tuition estimate, and that was used by the Executive Budget Committee and my leadership to advance the budget.
One of the things I'd like to add here is that we're only three quarters of the way through our recruitment for the fall of 2019. We have more work to do to ensure that the individuals who we've applied, been admitted, enrolled, the individuals who've been accepted and enrolled don't melt over the summer, and that we continue to focus our efforts on retention, making sure more of our freshmen become sophomores and more of our sophomores and juniors become juniors and seniors next fall. So we've got three more months to go, and everyone is focused like a laser on that effort.
And that's one reason I mentioned that the budget was built on the estimate we had in February. It takes quite some time to work through recommendation processes and to build a budget. So we believe that we have a conservative estimate, and as the president describes, all hands on deck to approve the yield and have students that haven't registered come back. So the budget is a fiscal plan, and that's what we'll present to you. As you have seen in the past, there's a key component which we always identify as fixed costs. So this budget will include an alignment of an estimated value for the 2% tuition rate increase and be able to tell students that that's approximately $2.2 million and a specific list of items that are funded with that allocation. Those are items that I believe most of this board is familiar with, faculty promotions, health, the increase in the employer health insurance, and contractual obligations. It is unfortunate that we do not have a capacity to recommend a salary increase effective July 1, but I'll also point out the Executive Budget Committee did not advance a recommendation recognizing that we had some other fiscal challenges that would not make that feasible this time. Please don't consider that as undervaluing employees and our commitment to compensation. That is an important variable in our strategic plan. But the governance structure that we have in place, including faculty and staff representatives, concluded that after being able to fully fund a 4% salary increase effective last January, that we do not have the capacity to do that again. So another important part of what you see in your agenda item that President referenced, reduction targets. It does align with the Executive Budget Committee in terms of what would be the college targets versus the support and auxiliary units. And as President described, and Provost Stevens can be specific in a minute, there aren't metrics that are, and as President described, uniformly applied towards finance, administration, public affairs, philanthropy. We have strategic priorities, we have different needs, we have different budgets as far as how much is personnel versus operating, how much is your contractual obligations versus your discretionary spending. So we were not prepared to move forward today with reduction targets for these other areas. But we did think it was important at the end of the academic year that the provosts and the deans were prepared to communicate with the faculty and department heads
that before they left campus, some of them, we obviously have a lot that do stay, but that we communicated these targets for them, and not appear that we made these decisions in the summer when they're gone. So the provost was prepared to release that information. We aren't prepared today. I got a question yesterday. Well, do you really know what your target's going to be for your own division? And the answer is no. We have not finalized recommendations. President and I are exploring variables. We have to make sure that these reduction targets are achievable and we maintain critical services to the campus. And that's what we're going to do now. We're going to, obviously, if you're a division head, you'd like to know what the expectation is. But again, we're not approaching this as we had in the past, where it was a normal process for me to go to a division head and say, you have 7 to 10 days to tell me how you're going to reduce your budget. So now there's the flexibility of building that, and it may be they may develop a plan for the year and be able to modify it. But not, you know, one of the key variables is you don't know when you're going to have staff turnover. But you can make a critical decision about how long do you keep that position vacant and reevaluate whether that position is needed. You'll make decisions on whether normally if you replace computers annually, perhaps you're going to look at a different replacement schedule. But these are the type of decisions that we want to be able to empower people closest to the programs to make. Now, I don't have a timeline today, but the president is committed that we're going to make a decision as quickly as feasible on the distribution of the rest of the reductions. They will be included very specifically in the budget we bring you on June 21st. Provost Stevens, perhaps you'd like to know just a little bit more about how the college amounts were determined.
So, President Caboni, I believe, I forgot who said it right already, indicated that the governance committee associated with, this is the executive budget committee, one of the budget committees associated with the RAMP model, made a recommendation of about 34% for the reduction target for the primary units. And the primary units mean the colleges. So that worked out to be about $3.4 million. What we did, and I say we, that was essentially me and my budget manager, I don't know her, associate vice provost of money in academic development. We've got to do something about titles. We used essentially the Kentucky performance funding model, and we aligned the metrics for our model for the redistribution with the decline in the metrics associated with that model. Does that make sense? So things like student credit hour production, credentials, underrepresented minority and low-income credentials, progression, those are all part of that Kentucky performance funding model. So we have 3 years' worth of data, and we looked at each college and how they performed in each of those metrics across those 3 years. If there was a decline, we represented that in our model. We used that for half of the money that we had to reallocate. The other half, we used essentially a proportional amount of the total primary unit budget. So we have a combination here of a strategic way of dividing out that redistribution, the reallocation, and a non-strategic way, the old way of just sort of an across the board by the amount, proportional amount of money that they had. The reason we did that was because if we just used the pure model, the skew was huge between the largest college reallocation and the smallest. And that didn't seem right. We're in this crawl, walk, run mode where we're easing into the new budget model. And so in
in an effort to smooth out that that big skew, we ended up using the proportional amount of the budgets. And then that we around resulted in the numbers that you've seen.
Can I ask a question? Make sure I understand, because sometimes in these discussions get to the simplistic portion of it. The executive budget committee makes the recommendation of the allocations between the two, which you ended up with 34% of
yes.
that $10 million number. Then you go into a process. Are you the only one, or are there other people participating in that process as you figure out the reallocation of that? Because I know you divided it among the colleges.
Right.
Am I correct?
Yes, I did. I have discussed this with the deans. They're all aware of the model that we used for this redistribution. They also lived, some of them, lived through the day where we just had across-the-board cuts, which was totally not strategic, and everybody hated that. So having that discussion with the deans was important. They know that we're open to other ideas for how to distribute this, but this is where we landed this time.
So fair to say it was a collaborative effort from them.
It was presented.
Yeah, okay. Presented, even though the decision may rest with you, it's a collaborative effort to a certain degree.
Yes.
Okay. May I add one thing we've left out so far of the conversation? One of the outgrowths of the resource allocation management process, the creation of a strategic investment fund, which is crucially important to what comes next for WKU. We've set aside $2.5 million in the next fiscal year for us to invest in the programs that have been identified for growth and transformation to help support innovative ideas and really to move the institution forward. Some portion of this is with one-time carry-forward dollars, but it's still dollars that have been set aside for the provost, the president, and the new EVP to think about what are the things that we must invest in as an institution, and how do we use that to continue our growth and our transformation? And so that is actually very, very exciting. And I'll give you an example of how this works in a way that's different than it used to. The Executive Budget Committee had suggested a set of potentially new faculty positions that might be hired. The recommendation from EBC was that we'd go to base budget. But we're thinking a little bit differently about that now, and the provost has that list and is making some decisions about it. For example, if we had a program that needed additional resources, additional faculty to be able to grow the number of students enrolled, we're going to approve the hiring of that faculty member. Right? We'll do a search. But we're going to have seed money to do it. So, dear Dean, we're going to fund this for 2 years from the Strategic Investment Fund, for you to hire, recruit, and have a faculty member, with the understanding that after 2 years, because of the enrollment growth that you create because of this position, revenue should be growing, and that will now move to the college's budget off of the Strategic Investment Fund. So again, a way for us to invest, to have seed money, and then to reinvest in new things. It's very, very much connected to the strategic plan and continuing innovation.
Our decisions about how those funds are spent or invested.
So there are two committees in the process that get requests. Those then go up to the Executive Budget Committee, who will then pass those on to the President, the Provost, and the EVP.
I would anticipate we would start the year with a specific list, but also a pool of funds that give you ability to respond as opportunities arise. So when we come back in June, we'll have some very specific examples of investments consistent with the strategic plan and consistent with initiatives that will enable enrollment growth and very important investments for the institution. So it is not going to be 100% an academic pool, but I think that it will be predominantly an academic pool. So there could be some other items on that list that we think are important. But again, that you're no entity that receives an allocation should consider this as ongoing in perpetuity. So I used the term perhaps an agenda item that I consider it seed money. And then there should be an ability to sustain it.
My intent also is to use the CAPE results. There were 15 programs recommended for enhance or grow. And so I think we prioritize those, maybe five this year, five next year, five the year after, but identify how we can use the strategic investment money to help invest in those programs. And that investment might not be a faculty member. It might be a program that requests modern software in order to give their students that edge so that they're competitive as they graduate. It might be investing in a graduate program as graduate students, because that would then underwrite their ability to increase the research that they have and support faculty research as well. So there's different ways to look at that growth, and I think that money would be useful for that. And again, it's a two-year commitment, because we would expect them to be able to grow and then reinvest in themselves.
Taking the long view on all of this, I think, as Regents, each one of us hopefully could argue that all this difficult work that you all have been doing really for the last couple of years is going to position Western to be able to compete and hopefully thrive in the future. We all know what the demographics are going to be like. There's a cliff out there waiting for people to fall off of who are not doing this type of difficult work, both in curriculum and budgetary management. There was an editorial in the Courier Journal a couple of months ago that talked about higher education and the value of it, which is difficult, arguably, to pinpoint exactly. But part of it was that higher education and liberal arts gives you the breadth and the depth to understand the complexities of this world in which we live. And I think this presentation is a great example of those complexities. And by having a broad education, you hopefully can develop some empathy and compassion for people in various situations with this. So with that, I thank you all. I thank the Budget Committee. I think Regent Johnson, over the last couple of years, has been carrying a heavy load with all the various people at the university. I commend them for all this hard work that's put us where we are today.
I have nothing. I'm sorry, you all.
I'm done, thanks. Are there any other questions?
Excuse me?
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I move that the board go into a closed session as provided in KR 61810 subpart 1 for the following discussion. Discussion proposed pending litigation against or on behalf of the university.
Motion second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, one side. Okay, the board has now returned to open session. The discussions and deliberations during the closed session were restricted to those stated in the motion, and no formal action was taken by the board in closed session. Other business primarily involves the listed announcements. We do want to make a correction there. Today is actually May 10th.
Yeah, please do not shut
May
11th.
We do have a commencement tonight.
My apologies.
And we have college recognition ceremonies tomorrow.
Regent Bale, tonight we will be graduating the largest class in the history of WKU. So certainly a wonderful celebration, something else to celebrate, and our honorary doctorate recipient, Sam Bush, also will be with us this evening. The walk down the hill, gathering at about 5:15 from the Kentucky Museum, for those of us roving at my office, walking down the hill at 6, and then the ceremony actually beginning
at 7 with the big red bash to follow. So a wonderful celebration tonight.
And what time do we come to you?
Julia?
I'm sorry, what?
Right at 5:45.
It's right there. Yes. You be over here in the gated lot at 4:30, and then they'll bring you up to our office at 5. But it's all right there in front of you.
4:30.
Okay, our other meetings are listed. I will not be here June 21st. It'll be the first meeting that I've missed in my 6 years on the board, but I have a previously scheduled conflict and Regent. Regent Johnson will chair that meeting, and actually, it's a budget meeting anyway, so you'll be in charge, but I will miss you all on June 21st. Any other business or comments from anyone? Appreciate everyone being here today, and I'll have a motion to adjourn and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye.